everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you, with the positive mind, here on WBAI 99.5 FM under dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Today we're going to be talking about a number of things, but I want to start off with the fact that this is April 1st. And at first we were kidding around about how would we do an April Fool's Day. And then I realized that April Fool is probably one of the most painful days that there are. It's like a whiplash day. It's a day when you go around hurting people. Now, who would ever think of that? Everybody's laughing. It's a joke, right? It's a joke. Hey, I want you to know I just went out with your brother. Ah, it's a joke. What happens in between the time that you tell somebody something or show somebody something and they suffer the pain of it, and then you jerk them out of that pain by giving them a reality that's not so painful? What happened to them? What happened to that sword-like little swipe that went across their brain or in their hearts in that joke? See, I don't like joking. I don't like people who joke around. I used to be one of them. I used to be one of the people who found that the best sense of humor was in my sarcasm. Not my sarcasm, no. But in my pointing out how strange things are in life. So I would say to things that people like, you know, would be attacked by milk cartons. And people would laugh because it was so silly. But after a while, I did so much of that that people started checking with each other. Is it reality or is it not reality? Well, that reminds me of what it's like to be a child. Being a child, aren't you always asking, is it real or is it not real? So the question becomes, can we in some way not put any further pain on people? And can April Fool's Day not be a day when people have to hurt each other? Now, how do you call it hurting each other, right? Well, let's start with the beginning of it. The beginning of it is cognitive dissonance. The concept is cognitive dissonance. What is cognitive dissonance? That's the space between reality and a perceived reality. Ben?
So you think that on April Fool's Day, people experience more cognitive dissonance?
They try. See, the best April Fool's joke is to, in some way, inspire cognitive dissonance. The person doesn't know the difference between truth and reality. Now, cognitive dissonance is very good in many ways because it leads to the belief in magic, for example. You saw the tiger disappear in the tank. You know what I mean? You watch the magic show and things happen. But if you remember during the attack in Iraq, it was shock and awe. The idea was to inspire cognitive dissonance. We wanted for them to think that we were so powerful that we were bigger than God, and it would dispower everybody. It would take away their power. That's what we wanted to do. War is like that. Riding on a horse and shaking your swords is like that. Screaming at somebody is like that. Making believe you're bigger than you are is like that. When you're a child and you are in a situation where you are terrified and you don't know what's to be afraid of and what's not to be afraid of, you can become shambles. You can turn into not knowing, as many of us are. I have here in the studio with me Ed Zara. Ed Zara is somebody who's listened to WBAI for a while, and Ed has been doing a program around children and their desire to recover. How they become resilient. Ed, welcome to WBAI.
Thanks, nice to be here.
Yeah, what's it like being on the air finally? Huh?
It's great. It's a lot like I imagined.
Talk about it.
Well, I've seen you and your face and I've heard your voice, but I've always imagined you in kind of this small space in this little studio. And it's, it's a little bit brighter than I imagined, but it's pretty much the same.
And you're watching the operation, though.
Yeah, watching you guys figure out how you do what you do.
Okay, so Ed, what is this work that you've been doing?
Well, I wrote a script. It's a story based on a true story. And it's basically about an orphan boy who overcomes the odds and becomes very successful. So I came to you, Armand, asking, is there a way we can teach some of those skills? Because resiliency is a thing that varies from person to person. Some people in the same situation might not be able to bounce back and succeed. And so how can we help people to succeed, especially kids?
Okay, now we talk about children, but you think about PTSD. You think about people coming back from the war, right? Similar things, which is some are resilient and some are not resilient.
Right.
So who is it that becomes resilient and who doesn't? The one who has learned to trust the least is the least resilient. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
The one who never gets to trust anything cannot be resilient. So what do? The treatment? The treatment is to be trustworthy. And the treatment for almost everybody to help them become resilient is to be trustworthy for them. That doesn't mean just take care of them. That doesn't mean just fund them. That doesn't mean just give them food. It means to be trustworthy.
Mm.
To be an honest person to the person you're trying to help. How does that fit with your picture?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because I'm wondering if it's possible to model that for somebody in a short amount of time. Because what I'd like to do is an arts education program around ideally a play. So are you saying that in order to teach some of these skills, you have to have a long-term relationship with those kids?
No.
No.
No. No, I meet children. People bring me their children, their damaged children. And within 45 minutes, we'll establish that.
And is it just by the nature of your personality that you're able to? Is that part of it?
Well, I'm also trustworthy.
Yeah.
You see, I know I'm trustworthy. They don't know I'm trustworthy. So when they come in, I know that they don't know I'm trustworthy, but I just feel trustworthy. And they get it. They get it. Once you're not acting. And I know a lot of people like that. I know a lot of people who could be there and just automatically the kids will take to them.
Mm.
Even damaged children, even damaged animals. There's something about them. I even imagine Caesar, what's his name? The dog whisperer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He must be trustworthy, don't you think? So what leads us to that? I decided that since it was April Fool's Day that I would bring you a little something in the form of poetry. And one thing I wanted to bring you was something that I pulled out of our archives here. I'm sorry. Paper, right? He loves it when I have paper notes. Julian, who is working with us. Here's a piece I'd like you to hear about what people want with each other. This is called The Invitation. It's by Uriah Mountain Dreamer. Imagine you meet somebody and you say to them, "It doesn't interest me what you do for a living. I want to know what you ache for. And if you dare to dream of meeting your heart's longing. It doesn't interest me how old you are. I want to know if you'll risk looking like a fool for love, for your dreams, for the adventure of being alive. It doesn't interest me what planets are squaring your moon. I want to know if you've touched the center of your own sorrow. If you've been opened by life's betrayals or have become shriveled and closed from fear of further pain. I want to know if you could sit with pain, mine or your own, without moving to hide it or fade it or fix it. See, to be my friend, I want to know if you can be with joy, mine or your own, or you can dance with wildness and let the ecstasy fill you to the tips of your fingers and toes without cautioning us to be careful, to be realistic, or to remember the limitations of being human. It doesn't interest me if the story you're telling me is true. I don't care. I want to know if you can disappoint another to be true to yourself. If you can bear the accusation of betrayal and not betray your own soul. I want to know if you can be faithful and therefore be trustworthy. I want to know if you can see beauty even when it is not pretty every day. And if you can source your life from God's presence. Yes, I want to know if you can live with failure, yours and mine, and still stand on the edge of a lake and shout to the silver of the full moon, yes. It doesn't interest me to know where you live or how much money you have. I want to know if you can get up after a night of grief and despair, weary and bruised to the bone, and do what needs to be done. It doesn't interest me who you are, how you came to be here. I want to know if you'll stand in the center of the fire with me and not shrink back. Oh, my friend, it doesn't interest me where or what or with whom you've studied or laid. I want to know what sustains you from the inside when all else falls away. I want to know if you can be alone with yourself and if you truly like the company you keep in the empty moments.
Fantastic.
Funny thing about that one. You can find it on my website if you go to Poetry and Meanderings. Now I want to bring you another one, just since it's a special day today. I'm going to read you something about a very interesting variation here. He learns to get close to life so that when he speaks of reality. And when he listens only for the truth. This is the kind of person I want to be, and I'm sure you want to be. He hears only the truth. The world is his footstool, his adventure, his lover, his vulnerability, and his pride. He becomes an intricate part of its byways and fills it with his spirit. No rural sort is he. He is ever seeking battle, wanting to know how sharp his teeth are, and what will fell him. He does not crowd himself in with his past or his present, but he gives himself room for growth. He is ever at the helm, so that from its environment he can absorb its wisdom. He can rest at peace unless that day was used for noble work. He covers up his desires to hide them from view when he has work to do. Now, what's important about that is I just read The Ideal Man. Now watch what happens when we change it and make it she. She learns to get close to life so that when she speaks of reality. And when she listens, she hears only the truth. That's the very same paragraph I just read with he in it, but it just sounded very different. The world is her footstool. Her adventure, her lover, her vulnerability, and her pride. She becomes an intricate part of its byways and fills it with her spirit. No rural sort is she. And she is ever seeking battle, wanting to know how sharp her teeth are and what will fell her. She does not crowd herself in with her past or her present, but she gives herself room for growth. She is ever at the helm. So that from its environment she could absorb its wisdom, she could not rest in peace until her strength that day was used for noble work. And she covers up her desires to hide them from her view when she has work to do. So that's two versions of the same thing with a he and a she. What did you notice about the difference?
Well, visually, you know, you're picturing a man at first and then a woman. And, you know, the context completely sort of changes the words.
They're two totally different poems. It's almost like I didn't read the first one when you hear the second one. The second one where the woman is the one who is doing all of the work, that sounds almost more natural than the first one. The first one is what you expect. But the second one is probably what's true. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about your resiliency. How well do you recover, my friends? And today we got a new phone number. A new phone number. Don't we?
Yes, that number is 212-757-5555.
Yes, we have finally achieved it. We've been trying to get this for ages.
Yes, we have this perfectly beautiful number now, and it's coming into the studio, and we want people to call that number and test it out today.
Yeah, 212-757-5555.
So that's four fives.
That's four fives on 57th Street, 757-5555, dedicated line only for this use.
Armand, I have a question for you.
Sure.
So it relates to the concept of resiliency and the April Fool's theme that you brought up earlier. One way that I've dealt with adversity in my life has been through humor and through joking around. And you started the program saying that you're not really a fan of that, but I know that it's helped me in very real ways.
Well, I'm a funny guy, aren't I?
You are a funny guy, but
you
but
laugh a lot with
funny
me, don't
how,
you?
You know, funny how.
Well, that's it. Funny how. Funny how, yes. Funny about myself, yes. Making fun of myself, yes. Humor about myself, yes. Humor about other people? Very little. Very little. So, what was Albert Einstein's favorite joke?
I don't know.
A skeleton walks into a bar and he says, I'd like a beer and a mop.
Pretty good.
It wasn't Einstein's joke. You can give that joke to anybody. It was... So humor, to me, is an escape valve. I use it a lot. It feels really good. It's nice to laugh with people. But the cost of hurting someone, and that being your humor, that's... I can't go along with that.
I got one for you.
Sure.
So Armand DeMille walks into a bar, and the bartender says, we have a drink named after you. And Armand says, you have a drink named Radio Legend?
Didn't Alan tell one yesterday?
Yeah, there was one. I can't.
Did he tell it?
Yeah, he did tell
on
it.
On the air, did he tell it?
Yeah, he did, yeah. I can't remember.
Is this a joke?
Right, yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I don't think he did tell it on the air.
He didn't tell it on the air, right?
No. Oh, was it?
Oh, it was a priest, a rabbi, a clergyman, and a Buddhist walk into a bar, and
the bartender says, "Is this
some kind of joke?" That was all right, Julian. Susan's on the line. Hey, Susan, this is Armand DeMille. That's not your real name.
Hi.
Your name's not Susan. Hi. You don't sound like a Susan.
No. Well, we can try it, right?
Yeah. Are you trying on the name? Okay.
Let's try it on.
Okay, good.
I was struck by what you were saying about kids who are traumatized and how the thing that they need is trustworthiness. And this has been my experience absolutely for my daughter. She's young. She's four. And she was sexually molested by a family member. And we've been through a really horrible court case to try to keep her safe, and unfortunately in family court they believe and advocate above all else to keep the child bonded with the parent even if he's harmed her and violated her and is a perpetrator. They want the child to have contact with this person. So we've, in the last 2 years since we discovered the abuse was happening, she's been required to have regular ongoing contact with him, and it's been very difficult for her. But the courts seem to view this as in her best interest, despite all kinds of reactions by her showing otherwise. But in either case, early on when the visits were starting, the person who was supposed to be supervising them or observing them, the person from Child Protective Services, was saying to me, just when she doesn't want to go and she's crying and fighting and saying she doesn't want to go, don't tell her that you're taking her to see him, or trick her, you know, put her in the room and then run away, and then we'll bring him in. And this one thing, you know, of course I have to follow the court orders and listen to them, but this one thing I wouldn't do. I really thought that it was so important for her to know that I was being honest with her and not tricking her, and so that I would, you know, tell her, now we're going to go here and you have to see him, even though, you know,
now, Susan,
difficult.
Let me ask you something. Beside the situation, how do you feel about this having happened with you there? What part of the responsibility do you feel? What part of it is inside you?
Incredibly difficult, because I don't, you know, think it's in her best interest, and it's, I feel in some ways that she understands it as a betrayal, because I'm supposed to be there to protect her and help her and listen to her, what she needs, and she's, you know, been quite clear in many, many, many instances that she doesn't want to go.
I'm going back with you. Hold on. Uh-huh. It's not about her anymore. What I'm interested in is, how do you feel? You know, you, what happened on the inside of you? Forget about it. Let's not talk about her now.
Okay.
What about your resilience?
It eats me up. It's very painful, and it's very...
Now, have you ever been through anything like this before in your life?
No, I was
never.
Was
there any other betrayal? No, not that, but how about betrayals? Did you have a family you could depend on?
Sure, of course, you know. People betray each other all the time.
But this is like a repeat of your childhood, having to deal with this. This is not the first time it happened. In other words, the first time that something horrible happened to your daughter, yes. But you've been in the middle of betrayals all your life.
Well, I guess who hasn't?
A lot of people
haven't. This is part of life.
No, a lot of people haven't. And there must be a pain inside you that goes deeper than just the situation in the courts, even though I agree with you. It's very difficult to deal with, you know.
I guess I can empathize with her in some ways, because I've experienced some kind of betrayals too that are difficult, and it's hard.
May be necessary for you to clear out your history.
I go and speak to the professional, and that helps. But it's still a very challenging position to be in, because I want to protect her.
Okay, but the work that I do, mind you, the work I do on this radio is never with the people on the outside, but the people who call.
Yeah.
So you're inviting me to help you feel better about you, not just the situation.
Yeah. Okay, can you do that?
Yes, I would love you to feel better about you. Even though I don't know your name.
Well, it's difficult position to be in, to be the person who has to deliver to these things when she doesn't want to go. That's a
thing. Again, as I'm saying to you, there's a piece of your history that gets in the way of your being really effective with this.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I hear. Okay? If you ever want to send me an email, I'll write back to you and we'll talk about it.
Okay.
Because I know you feel very private about it.
Yeah, it's not something I can really speak openly about.
I hear. Thank you.
Not publicly, legally also.
Thank you for opening your heart. Thank you.
Okay. What should I email? What's your email?
Armand@thepositivemind.com.
Okay. Armand. ARMAND.
Yeah, and if it's coming from somebody, what's the first letter of the name of the person it's coming from?
D.
Good. I like that. That's my last name. I'll remember.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye. Yesterday we talked about the stories and the stuff. We talked about the stuff and we talked about the stories. We talked about the feelings. And then we talked about the stories that are outside of the feelings. And we have stories that are true stories. I mean, Susan D's story is true. There's a traumatic event going on. But underneath that, it's the stuff of Susan. And sometimes you can't get the story straight unless you get to the stuff. And that's an example of what we're doing here today. Here's another poem that I like very much about what it's like to work. It's very short. A master in the art of living shows no sharp distinction between his work and his play. Now, I consider myself to be a master in the art of living because I don't know if I'm working or I'm playing. I don't know what I'm doing here. A master in the art of living shows no sharp distinction between his work and his play, his labor and his leisure, his mind and his body, his education and his recreation. He hardly knows which is which. He simply pursues his vision of excellence through whatever he is doing and leaves others to determine whether he is working or playing. To himself, he always seems to be doing both. So if you're going to pick an ideal in life, my friends, let it be that way. Let it be you don't know the difference between your work and your play. 212-757-5555, our new number, which you may find more difficult to remember. In your profession, Ed, in putting this play together, are you working or are you playing?
All the time.
What does it feel like? Tell me.
It's great, yeah. It feels like a constant sense of play because I get to inhabit this world that I really enjoy, and it's been time with characters that I love. So it's a pleasure. And then on top of that, I get to meet people like you and talk about it and meet actors and work with actors who are, you know, usually pleasures to deal with. So it's a lot of fun.
Are you casting this thing yet?
I'm casting a reading soon, yeah.
He's a guy.
I know. Julian's very talented.
Julian is very talented. And because we have an insight, we may get it at a discount. We may get it at a discount because he's a very talented man and very much in demand, running all over working for Apple and everybody else.
All right.
Hey, let's take another call. Ray Ray, you're on the line. This is Armand DeMille. Hello.
Hello, Armand.
Hello, Ray Ray.
How are you today?
I'm great.
I guess I should say I love April Fool's Day. I know you said you didn't like it, but I like it because it kind of, it makes you feel a little like you could play a trick on someone, but it wasn't that bad, the one I did today.
What'd you do?
I just said I was at a yoga class, and I just said to this girl that I got married, and she came over to congratulate me, and I waited, and it was kind of high. You know, our energy was kind of high, and then I said, April Fool's, and she said, you got me.
So in other words, she felt happy.
Right.
She opened her heart to you.
Yes.
And then when she walked over to you, you slammed her in the face.
No, I didn't think
well,
it was
in
like
effect,
that.
What happened to her heart? This lady wanted to show you how much she cared for you. This lady was celebrating for you. She wasn't there to criticize you or to be jealous. You made her feel lifted. And then you shut her down. I don't think that's so nice. And I think it has an effect. I'm not critical of you.
Right.
You know, I love you. You're beautiful. But I want you to see, we don't want to invite people to open their hearts.
Right.
When we're going to have to shut them down. We do that to too many. Hey, stay on the phone if you want. We have to take a short break. Come back. I'll
talk
to you,
okay? Okay, I
will. Stay on with us, okay? Bye-bye.
Sure. Bye.
Take a short break. We'll come right back. We'll be right back. way. What was that music, Ben? Your Responsibility. You see what I mean?
That was La Femme Chest Mystery by Pimp Daddy Nash.
Hey, friends. Hey, you know, like we said, we're trying out a new phone system, and it turns out it's not perfect. So if you call, you do not get directly to us. When it gets busy, it goes into this place. So don't call us. We'll call you. How about that? You want to make the calls? Hey, Ray Ray.
Yes.
So tell me, how are you doing today?
I feel great.
Yeah, and what made you want to call us today and make contact with us?
Well, I couldn't get through last week. I like last week's subject.
Yeah.
So I figured I got the number quick this time, so I figured I would call.
All right. We're gonna have to beat the number system. Are we ever going to meet you? Are you ever going to come around and say hello to us here at WBAI?
Yeah, I've been to see you one time.
Yeah, I thought your voice sounded familiar. Yeah, it's nice to hear you back.
Yeah, I just upgraded myself. My name is really Rachel, but I changed it to Ray Ray.
And you just upgraded yourself.
Yes.
I like that. I like that.
I figured a change was needed, so I like Ray Ray. It's just a sign, a feeling of, you know, happiness and, you know, nothing sad, so.
Rachel, thank you very much. I have to get going. I'm going to return some calls.
All right. Thank you so much, Armand. You're a great person.
Thank you. Let's try this one out. In the meantime, we have... So this whole question about whether you can be resilient or not, the whole question about whether you can recover or not, I think is dependent on the person delivering it. Now, we saw an example a minute ago of a woman with a tragedy of her daughter, but she had her own tragedy behind it that was also affecting her work. Not that her work wasn't perfect, not that her love wasn't there, but when you carry a load, that load affects your ability to be present for the other person. I see that so much in therapists. You know, how good can a therapist be? As good as their load can be lightened, can they lighten the load of others? It sounds like a biblical quote. Is that going to work, do you think, Julian? Yeah, we don't know. Let's just give out the phone number again and we'll try it. I'll call these old people later. 212-757-5555. We're going to have to just go with the call that comes in. First one on the line gets us. The rest, we'll get your phone number. 212-757-5555. Where's the thing you were reading, Julian? Yes. About magic. Let's take a call first. You don't think we're disorganized. We're here because it's April Fool's Day. See, we could get away with it. This is a very organized show, but we're just kidding you into thinking it's not. Ben, can you survive without making jokes at people?
Sure, I can survive, but I think it's just part of my personality that I've adapted over the years.
Uh-huh.
You know, just to be a bit of a clown here and there.
Okay, let's talk about that.
I just love clowning around. I mean, there, you know, I can be serious when it's appropriate, but, you know, jokes and humor have gotten me through some very tough times. And
me too.
Yeah, and sometimes I've been in places where I feel so sort of heavy and weighed down that the only thing I want to do is just to go home and watch some stand-up comedy to just force the laughter out of me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, they like. The old saying, laughter is the best medicine. I found that to be true in many cases.
Yes, so nobody says that it's not. What we're saying is humor at the cost of another person might have a toxic effect on you and on them. Sarah.
Hello?
Sarah.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to disrupt.
You didn't mean to what?
Disrupt. I was hearing the whole thing. It was so interesting. You know how you were saying that the phone line wasn't working perfectly, so it's so interesting. It's like I was continuing to hear the radio, but on the call. Interesting.
Oh, nice. Sarah, thank you for calling in. Sarah, are you a kind of person who takes care of people?
I am. I like to think so.
Yeah, it sounds like you're somebody who takes care of people at the cost of your own well-being. Is that true?
Bam, we get in real fast.
And Sarah, do you have trouble getting angry?
I do.
Yeah, and when you get angry, what happens to you? You turn it against yourself?
I'm sorry?
You turn it against yourself? You criticize yourself for getting angry?
No, not really. I would say I'm quicker to be hurt more than angry.
Okay, well, it's the same. All right. You're quicker to be hurt than angry, so you don't respond to anger when people are hurting you.
Honestly, I don't understand anger so well as an emotion.
Yeah, I see. You try to understand it, yes.
Emotions,
you so. Try to understand anger. I understand. So who are you mad at?
As of right now, thank God, no one. Yeah. That's good.
And when you were 10 years old, who were you mad at?
At 10 years old, I was probably an oblivious child, so...
You were watching. Say that again.
I guess maybe teachers, maybe some of my teachers weren't so appreciative of me.
They didn't appreciate you. And did your parents appreciate you?
Yeah, I was lucky that way. You know, I guess it's not so simple, so I guess half and half. I was probably hard to raise, but I think also they appreciate me as well.
Yeah. So what part of you hurts nowadays, Sarah?
I'm sorry?
What part of you hurts? What part of you aches?
It's difficult to answer that question. I know I have pain and hurt. How would I even know which part it was?
Good question. That's the beginning of the question that we look for inside people. So since it's hard for you to identify feelings, since it's hard to do it, right? Write down these five words. Have these five words said... Mad, bad, glad.
Are these random?
And scared. You see those five words? No, they're not random.
Okay.
Now, how old are you, Sarah?
I'm 21.
Yeah. In the first 10 years of your life, would you say you were more sad or more depressed?
I would say I was happy in the first 10 years of my life.
First 10 years. And when did it start going bad?
I don't think things are so black and white, so I wouldn't call it going bad or good. I think people can simultaneously be happy and appreciate a lot of things and also at the same time have sadness or have moments of sadness. I think there's also nature and not just circumstances that occur to a person. So I think by nature, I'm happy. I call myself a pleasure extractor.
You extract pleasure from people?
No, from everything, from anything. You could go outside and extract pleasure from, like, the air. Something's enjoyable. I zero in on it and, like, extract the part that I could appreciate, you know?
What a lovely thing. What a dedication.
Yeah, it's an effort sometimes, but I feel like it really can work. Like, it's not real.
So if you love somebody who's depressed, what do?
I feel like I have been in that situation sometimes because I feel like people get drawn to me. I end up giving a lot and getting heavily invested emotionally and completely.
So that's what I would imagine would happen with you. And one of the things I sensed from the moment you got on the phone when you apologized for interrupting our interruption, it sensed to me, I said, oh boy, what a sense of responsibility she has. And that's what led me to all my questions about you. Because I heard you apologize for interrupting us as we were asking you to call. And I said, what a sense of responsibility this lady has at the cost of her own desires to be here, you know? So
I didn't think of it like, I was just automatic.
Yeah. It would be good for you to have a group around where you could have people who give you feedback about the way you are with them and the way they are with you. Have you ever had that?
No, because I don't like to get so self-absorbed. I feel like...
I know. Well, how about you don't like to be so self-absorbed? Indicated. You don't want to look that close inside.
No, because I think I'm an internal thinker, and I usually can, like,
I usually
make sure to think through, like, what's going on, and know where I'm at. It's just easier for control, and it's easier to just...
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you. What this is called is protecting the way you are, which is fine by me.
That's why I called, by the way. I called because I was so interested by what you were discussing earlier about resilience.
Yeah.
You were speaking about how resilience is actually weakness, that a person a lot of times will build up certain mechanisms at the cost of possibly, and a person can end up thinking that they're stronger for it by pulling further and more deeper inwards.
Yeah.
And it turns out that they're actually, and you were stating that they were weaker. And I guess I joined a little too late along because I didn't hear why.
Okay, well, I can't go back and do the program now, but you could re-listen to the program a little earlier. I don't think I exactly said that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. What did you say?
But I can't do it now. I can't go back into what I was saying earlier. I appreciate your call. I have to get on. I have other calls standing by.
No problem. Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure.
Thank you, Sarah. Bye-bye. 21 years old. Very often, 212-757-5555. Very often, you can't move. You can't budget because at 21, sometimes you fix the position. Nope, I believe if you just figure it out, it'll work. And once that position is fixed, I nudge up against it, I nudge up against it, I nudge up against it a third time, and I say, nope, it's not yielding, I'm going to back off, give that person the love and respect they deserve. Let me find somebody else who's ready to jump in. 212-757-5555. Yeah, Ben.
It's like you were saying, it's so easy to get into a fixed position. And I think there, somewhere around the time I turned 25, I went from thinking that I knew everything and that I was invincible to realizing that I know actually very little, and I'm very mortal, and I'm vulnerable, and I don't know as much as I think I know.
And when that happened, Ben, how did that change you? How did that...
It definitely gave me a lot more respect for my father, because I spent my earlier years thinking that I knew better than him, you know, that sort of teenage rebelliousness, and getting to the point where I had to step back and say, wait, I don't know as much as I think I know, and maybe there is no such thing as a grown-up, maybe we're all just kind of trying to figure this out on the fly, and I should have more compassion for others.
Nice going. Hey, we have Mary Ann's on the line. Hi, Mary Ann. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. Listen, I called you yesterday. This is Mary Ann, Anna. But I just want to know, when I get angry sometimes and I can't get it out, and I get invasive thoughts, sometimes it lasts for 3 or 4 days of revenge, and it's like a bullet in my mind. I can't stop the thoughts. Is that very serious? Could I be damaging my mind?
Oh, I don't know about damaging your mind, but... Say it again to me, and say it again to me slowly.
Okay, when I have an argument with someone, and even if I'm able to argue a little bit back, I will go home, and within a day, I start thinking about ways to revenge this person. And it doesn't stop for about 3 days. It comes about every 3 or 4 seconds. Just these invasive thoughts about getting even with the person that the other person won the argument.
Yeah, it does kind of. It seems to take hold of you in some way. Your mind doesn't let it go all at once, right?
Right? It's stuck. It gets stuck in my mind.
And then it eventually relents.
Yeah, but sometimes it lasts longer, 3-4 days, and then it just disappears.
Yeah. So it means when it lasts for 3 or 4 days, it means it has a symbolic attachment. Give me an example of one like this. Give me a recent one that happened.
Okay. Where I had an argument with a girlfriend, and I said I was sorry, I didn't think I did anything that wrong, and she wouldn't let it go. She kept going on and going on. And
okay, now tell me about Mariana as a little girl saying this to her mother.
Oh, I can tell you easily. My mother would say, I'll give you the Irish accent, you can't criticize me, I'm your mother, I'm so good to you, I do everything for you, you can't say anything bad about me, someday you'll see me in a coffin.
So you get locked into...
What?
When you get locked into these places where you can't let it go in your mind, you're bringing up an echo of the past. And it's not the present that you lock into. It's the past threatening to bleed through that you're trying to prevent.
So how do I help?
Well, the way I would do it is take the advice I'm saying to you now, which is connect it to your background.
And do what?
When you see yourself locked in, say, what does this remind me of? And listen to your mother's voice say, ah, it's her I'm talking to. It'll release.
And then can I talk back to her or yell back?
You don't even have to.
Oh, just recognize where
Just recognize the source, because the idea of the unconscious is to keep it unconscious, so it wants you to keep the story going so that you could invite and you could avoid the real feeling underneath, which is what you had as a child with your mother.
Okay, so I have to try to find that real feeling. I guess I hated her then.
Yeah, so you just got, it's not even the real, real feeling. You just got to find the original location.
Okay.
You know? And when you locate the original location, it sometimes just releases the current compulsion.
Okay, maybe I could write it. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe so.
Okay. Can I ask you a quick other question?
Sure.
I have two friends over the years. They are, they're depressed, but doctors have given them every type of psychotherapeutic medicine. Two had electric shock treatments, and their mind does not respond to this. What does this indicate about their mind? They just never get well.
Who's the doctors?
Oh, big hospitals here in New York, electric shock treatments. And they happen to be rich people, and they're in therapy with two different, you know, well-known shrinks. They just can't. It doesn't have any effect. The medicine doesn't have any effect.
You know, I've never met anyone.
Yeah.
Where who hasn't responded?
Really?
Yeah. So I don't understand.
I don't. Okay.
It just means that they don't feel safe enough to come out of their cave.
But that must be a powerful mind that's so willful that.
Yes.
That's what I was thinking. They have an early position and they're not changing for anyone.
Yeah, they're playing safe. I understand.
Okay, well, listen, thanks for everything.
Sure.
Bye.
In response to magic and the request about magic, also from our website, Julian, tell me about magic, okay? Julian's going to read us a beautiful thing about magic. Go ahead.
This is called Magic is Not Easy. Magic is not easy. Not presto, change-o, hocus-pocus, snap your fingers, and all is changed. Magic is not easy. Abracadabra will not do it. Spin around twice and all is changed. Nothing changes. Nothing. Magic is not easy. Nothing moves unless the heart is in it. Unless the will is in it. Cutesy pie, rainbow light magic, think good thoughts and all will be well, budges nothing. Flits along like a stifled titter, unwilling or unable to become a full laugh. Magic is not easy. Listen. Everything is connected. Everything. Ignore that it will not compute. Everything is connected. If you would do magic, listen. Start here. Everything is connected. Nothing moves unless the heart is in it, unless the will is in it. Magic is not easy. Simple words won't do. Chanting the same song day in, day out, every full or new moon is not enough. If the mouth is singing, hail unto these spirits of the south, while the mind is humming, budgets and schedules, and where did I leave the keys, this is not ritual, only rote, and we have more than enough of that. Magic is not easy. If you would speak magic, listen. Magic is fed by the heart, made manifest by the will. It is always easier to invoke what you have learned to name external. When the demons inside, the ones whose true names are self-doubt and self-hate, have grown sufficiently strong? When we will not, cannot touch our own demons, we invent others. Or worse, sing the name of demons invented for us. Magic is not easy. If you would live magic, listen. You must move on beyond your pain. Listen, you must turn and face your fear. Listen, you must touch the demons. Hold them. Ignore your scorching flesh. It is illusion. Cradle the flailing thing. Cradle it. Cradle it. Madonna with child. Madonna, Madonna, mother, gift. Cradle your demon self until you can love it into healing. Magic is not easy.
That's beautifully done, Julian. That's beautiful. I'd like to have that clipped and put on a YouTube video, right? Even with a station of your face. That's beautifully done. No, magic is not easy. How'd you feel as you were reading it?
Great. It's a beautiful poem. I mean, I had only read it once before.
You occupied it when you read it.
The words are possessive. You know, they possess you.
No,
in a way.
You occupied it. You became it. This was you.
Thank you.
It's a beautiful thing. You think Do you feel like we were being shifted over to another plane?
Yeah, I love the way Julian reads that. We heard him read it before we came on the air, and I knew that it would sound great on the air.
Ed, welcome, and I'm glad you're here.
Thanks.
This has been an experience for you, watching the operation, as we've promised to quite a few people, especially our pie makers, right, that there's going to be an ability to visit in with us. As your project grows, I would like us to follow it.
Great.
And I will follow along with you on trying to find ways that we could help people around this issue of childhood resilience.
Thanks. Yeah, I appreciate that so much.
Yeah.
Thanks, Armin. It's been a real pleasure to be here.
Yeah. We could replay that for the ending. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We'll be back with you next Tuesday with some more exciting stuff. And let this be the April Fool Day. Let it be the day that starts us into something new.
Be nice to other people.
Be nice to other people. Do something really kind today. An unexpected kindness. Maybe just as much. Imagine that. Imagine if we did it that way.
That's kind of perfect.
You didn't expect me to be kind. I'm going to be kind. An unexpected kindness as a way of cognitive dissonance. What a healing thing that is. We'll be back with you next week, my friends. 212? No. Armand@thepositivemind.com for email.
Yeah, make sure to send those emails. We love reading them and bringing them up in these shows. Thank you.